Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button. Then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you haven't already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topics. Suggestions for future programs, go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name that you used when you joined Ulu. The 2024 Ulu Annual Convention and Members Meeting will be held on Saturday, the 9th of March, and Sunday, the 10th of March, in Atlanta. It is our first face-to-face meeting in a number of years, so mark your calendar and make plans to attend. Remember, this meeting is for members only. So if you're not a member of Hulu, think about joining. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of Hulu. This evening's topic is Pan-African and Reparations Actions on the Rise. Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Sister Q, I am doing great. I was really pumped up. I just left the program today at 8:30. It was online 7 to 8:30, and so that's really got me fired up. I'm really doing well today.
Glad to hear that. So, Brother Shabaka, what is your topic tonight on Pan-African and Reparations Actions all about?
Yeah, well, Sister Q, thank you for the question. Oftentimes, and that's one of the reasons that I attended this program today. And let me tell you something about it, because it's very important. The importance is that it was hosted by the Reparations Education Project and the National Black Cultural Information Trust. They put on a program, and they had the people who were, except for the organizer of the program, and I have to give a really good credit because she's up in our age range, but she sees fit to try to bring young people into the movement. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we don't see it in this, we talk it, but she's doing it. And that's what really impressed me about her. So the title of the program that I listened to was titled Millennial Activists in the Reparations Movement Speak. All right. And so what they did, they were speaking about what they were doing, how they were doing, what inspired them, who inspired them, all right, and then how they've been able to maintain it. And some of them had some, I mean, the people were, I guess, ranged from, I guess, mid-20s to about 40. So they in that time, then they were talking about Gen this and Gen that, and I don't understand what that means. I just know they were young people relative to myself. But they were talking, and like I said, I'm very appreciative of the sisters who organize it. In fact, it's organized to come on every week. So I want to have the family listen. I'm going to give you the web address. Go there, get some information. I mean, it's a weekly program. Today was featuring the youth and their experience in the reparation movement. But anyway, if you go to, let's see here, nbcit.org/events, all right, you will see a number of things that's upcoming, and you may want to try to stay tuned with that. Now, why do I bring that up? This is important because, you know, these brothers and sisters are a part of the reparation movement, and they're involved. It's just one aspect of the reparation movement. Part of a Pan-African movement, and this part is reparation. They keep us attuned. The reparation movement just keep us attuned of what they did, all right, and how we need to have a remediation or remedy for the harms created from what they did. From the check, which is when they stole our wealth that we created, to the beatings and whippings and shootings and lynchings and all that other kind of stuff, the psychological and physical harm, giving us poor food, the psychological and physical harm, all right, as a consequence of that. So it keeps us on our mind. Doesn't have us dependent on it, but it keeps us out there visible that these are the things that we need to necessarily know that we're fighting for. All right, and we know that the European is organized globally, and obviously Pan-Africanism, all right, is a global expression, all right, to counter his global expansion. So I thought that was good. The young people was on there, family members, if you get a chance, go to that website, and you'll get to learn a lot and be able to appreciate. Like I said, they have that. In addition to that, Sister Q, headline. Minister Farrakhan sues ADL for $5 billion.
Alrighty.
Let me repeat that. Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam have sued the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, for allegedly misusing the terms anti-Semite and anti-Semitic, both of which terms the leading Jewish advocacy group has assigned to the Nation of Islam. You know, they've been doing it for over 40 years. So now the nation is fighting back. I thought that was important news in the Pan-African world because it does two things, in my opinion. One, and we never really looked at the minister as bowing down to anyone, but it gives us, you know, like when we were, you know, a few years ago, applauding and out there reaching and supporting the candidacy of Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, and we said, well, look, this is showing that we can do stuff in America. All right. To some, he might not have done as much as we thought he would have done, given that high position. All right. But we've never known the nation, all right, to fail us in bringing to the world the injustices committed against his people and us, and then doing something about it. All right. And then accusing him of lying, all right, and lying, all right, and making him seem more as a predator, right, than a person who's out here trying to do good based on his assessment of our current reality. So I thought that was good. Let me read a couple lines, from that document. The document was filed, the complaint was filed October 16th. They had a press conference this past Saturday, all right, in which the nation came out and explained it, and they say they will be providing. Now, they have a case, so they're not going to provide a lot of information, because if you have to buy a lot of information, you know, you got discoveries and all that other kind of stuff, you have to turn that information over to the opposition. All right, and so they don't necessarily, at this point in time, you know, want to show their trump card, all right? So they're going to, you know, deal with some stuff. But he's got, you know, the nation does well at documenting. They have some, at least a couple good lawyers. I know of at least a couple of them. And they have worked with even the organization that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Headed before he chose to run for presidency. Well, he headed in trying to bring the sensitized the African community of the injuries and harm associated with COVID-19 and the vaccines that they were trying to make us get. So, also working against Bowser, who is the mayor of D.C., when she was trying to do some stuff that, you know, was unimaginable. A black woman, all right, trying to do what she was doing. And I won't go into it. People can look at the cases. They can look at his lawsuit. And the lawsuit that was filed against her. But anyway, there were things that was assumed, and let me just read the first couple lines of this in the introduction of the lawsuit. It says, this action is brought by the national representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Now, we know that Elijah Muhammad has passed, but he always gives praise and thanks to the teacher. hereafter, referred to as Minister Farrakhan. And Muhammad, Holy Temple of Islam, as the Nation of Islam, to ensure that he and those who believe and follow him and others do not continue to be deprived of rights secured to them by the United States Constitution. A lot of the stuff that a lot of organizations do are illegal. But they get the right because, number one, they have wealth, they got support, and they pay off the congressmen and senators. And so as a consequence of that, you know, our rights, you know, goes out the door. Anyway, to continue, for nearly 40 years, the Anti-Defamation League, later joined by the Simmons Wiesenthal Center, in violation of the rights and protection guaranteed by the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution have engaged in actions to hinder Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam from continuing their mission that Allah gave to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In other words, it's saying doing the mission work or missionary work supposedly assigned to the nation, they have been interfered with based on the ADL program. But most important is this last thing, this one thing, and I want to make. And so we're not talking about no small thing. But anyway, it says here the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs of Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, the plaintiffs seek to find the defendants jointly, that's the three people I mentioned earlier, and severely liable in the amount of $4.8 billion declaratory relief, attorney fees and costs, and any other relief warrant as a result of defendants' actions. Now, as I said, sister, I think the importance of that is to show that we are taking an aggressive stand, all right? Mm-hmm. We're taking an offensive stand as opposed to waiting for things to happen to us and then panicking and then moving as a consequence of panicking and trying to get something done right away, all right? And I'm sure that he has, with his ministers, have strategized and laid out and discussed this, you know, over months, all right? And then the events or war going on, war, it's not really a war. It's hard to say how Israel, which surrounds Gaza and provides it with electricity, water, and supplies, how can you go to war when you've already at war and you've already deprived them? All you got to do is cut it off. All right. And right. So they say war. It's not a war because they are repelled against that continuous occupation. All right. And it's like an open air prison. You know, like you can't go anywhere. You can only go in that area. It's just you outside. Mm-hmm. You can go outside, but you can't go no further than that. You got relatives in the right. West Bank. You can't go there. All right. You might have relatives in Egypt. You can't go there. All right. Definitely, you know, you might have a few Palestinians because, you know, there are some Jewish Palestinians that live inside Israel proper. You might, go relatives there. You can't go there. So you basically are in a prison. You just don't have the walls that you normally are associated with prison. So I thought that was good news. I wanted, just in case, because it was relatively recent, you know, from a few days earlier, the filing, and then the announcement, you know, on the press conference that they had on the weekend. So I thought that was something that our Pan-African and reparations world can look towards as meaningful. But now let me just so that we can have a clearer understanding, and sister, I welcome, you know, your input, and family members, please call in. I want to go to the foundation of this, because the ADL and other Jewish organizations and white groups have accused the Nation of Islam, and particularly the Minister Farrakhan, of being anti-Semitic. All right, and so I want to show you the fallacy. I want to show you the fallacy of this assertion. Now, go to Webster, go to any of the online dictionaries you find online, and it'll come up with this. What is the meaning of Semitic? And this is what will generally come up. Semitic, relating to or denoting a family of languages that includes, now I'm going to tell you what Semitic is. It's a family of languages. It's not a race of people. Family of languages, all right, which includes Hebrew. I'm going to talk about that, which is supposedly what the Jewish speak in Israel. They don't all speak Hebrew now. Arabic. You heard me say the term Arabic, right? Okay. Aramaic. and certain ancient languages such as Phoenician. All right, Phoenician really was the whole area occupied now was Palestine, all right, and that was during the time of the pharaohs. And some people mm-hmm. say that they were also commissioned by the pharaohs to navigate, outside of the territory. Al-Qaedian, constituting the main subgroup of the Afro-Asiatic family. The main subgroup of the Afro-Asiatic family, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the Semitic language is an Afro-Asiatic, all right, language family.
Mm-hmm.
All right, which means
mm-hmm.
it has its root in North Africa as well as Southwest Asia. Okay?
Right.
All right. And it has ancient connections. All right. Now, when we now apply that to, well, what is meant by a Semitic people? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
First, Semitic, which is just a language grouping. Now we talk about mm-hmm. a Semitic people. All right. It's a member of any of the number of peoples of ancient Southwestern Asia, including the Al-Qaedians, Phoenicians, Hebrews, and Arabs. I want to stress that name. A descendant of these people, a member of a modern speaking group of a Semitic language. All right? So in other words, even Amharic is called, they don't refer to Amharic, which is spoken in Ethiopia, but Amharic
mm-hmm.
is considered an Afro-Asiatic language. Okay?
Right.
All right? And in some interpretations, because of the pronunciation, the letterings that represent are different, all right, but the pronunciation of certain words, like I remember that there were some Arabic terms that even a person who spoke Amharic could understand, okay, because
mm-hmm.
it belonged to a family. So you know that there is, like if they Bantu languages, which are multiple languages in Central and South Africa, all right, they are derived from a root, all right? And so the root and the formation and structure of them, they call it Bantu, okay? It's one of the major
right.
language groups or families in Africa. All right, so we found out that the people, you know, are those people that speak that language group. Now, I want you to listen to this, sister, and I know you have, because you much abreast and you keep yourself informed. Now, Arabic is one of the languages included in this Semitic term, and a Semitic people are the people, a group of people who would speak, you know, this Afro-Asiatic language called Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last time this is according to Netanyahu, you know, the prime minister of Israel, he said there's only
mm-hmm.
14 million Jews in the world. Now, that's according to him.
Really?
Yeah, 14
wow.
million. Well, I think the highest number that I heard was 15 million. Let's escalate it up to 15 million. We have 45
right.
million black people in the U.S., that means that we have three times as many people just in the U.S. as there are Jews
right.
in the world.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. Now, Israel, okay, I think has something like a lot of Jews have left, you know, countries like Europe, all right, and then
mm-hmm.
have moved to Israel when it was colonized and founded by the U.S. and Britain. All right,
mm-hmm.
and I think there is something like 8 to 10 million Jews, and maybe a little bit more, but 8 to 10 million. Let's give it 10 million Jews in 10 million Jews in what we call Israel today. Okay,
mm-hmm.
now next door,
mm-hmm.
Next door, all right, is Egypt. All right? They have almost 100 million people speaking Arabic. That's
okay.
Just Egypt. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's just Egypt.
Okay.
I haven't talked about the other countries in North Africa or the countries in the Sudan. The Sudan has about roughly 70 million, 60, 70 million. Okay, so we've already got 150 million people that speak Arabic. So how are you going to tell me that a country with only 14 people and not all of the people, that 15 million, speak Hebrew?
Right.
That's a relatively recent since the formation of the state. They had Hebrew words in their language, all right, but not all of them speak Hebrew. Okay, and I'm going to tell you what they spoke in a minute. All right, so that's telling mm-hmm. me that a Palestinian who is an Arab, all right, speaking Arabic is not is anti-Semitic. That means he's anti himself.
Exactly.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to lay it out, but see, as long as they've been speaking a lie, and you believe the lie, and then you become to think about what it is. Now we know that the a lot of the Republicans, particularly those Republicans to the right who are fundamentalist Christians and all that, they want things mm-hmm. to happen in the Middle East because they're looking for the coming of Christ, the Messiah, the return of
right.
the Messiah. So they
right.
they want to support war, and they want you know Israel to succeed so that Jesus has come returns. All right, that's their motivation, you know, for supporting
mm-hmm.
Israel, return of Christ. All right, so
right.
that's their interest. Point number two. Now, where did most of the Jews come from? Now, let's say the Jews say that they're 15 million. They claim that majority, at least from 70 to 80% of that 15 million, are Jews who classify themselves as Ashkenazi.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they say the remaining 15 to 20%, all right, are Sephardim or Sephardic. Okay? The Sephardic Jews are those who live next to the Arabs. They come from the Middle East area, Jordan, you know, Syria, even Iran, Iraq, Iran, North Africa. In fact, they went into Spain, all right, and were expelled. Spain expelled them in the 1400s when it was also expelling the Moors. In fact, the Sephardic Jews came in with the Moors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting history that, you know, some people who are interested in need to look at. But they came into Spain and then they were expelled, all right? And then when the formation of the State of Israel, a lot of them went there. But the overwhelming
right.
majority of the Jewish population that controls the government are Ashkenazis. You say, oh, okay. Well, who are they? Well.
Good question.
Yeah, who are they? All right, well, let's see.
Yeah.
They come from Eastern Europe and speak Yiddish. Did I say Hebrew or Yiddish? They speak
Yiddish.
All right? You go on the dictionary,
mm-hmm.
it says that Yiddish is a German dialect. And it includes some Slavic words, you know, like Russian, Ukrainian, and all that other kind of stuff. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And they might have a few words thrown in there, you know, that might be Hebrew. And they used to do that because Hebrew was the spoken language of the Jews, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see words being carried over, all right? Some claim that these Ashkenazis are Kazakhs. And Kazakhs was a group of people of Turkish ancestry, all right, who converted, keep this in mind, who converted to Judaism in the 6th and 7th century. All right, family, it's there. Just go online, look in your dictionary, look in your encyclopedias, and get all that stuff there, all right? It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to figure out where do these ancient Jews come from if they might have their origin as Kazakhs, and they might be have converted in mass, all right? And what was happening during that time? Well, you know, there was the rise of Islam, so Islam was making its way up to Turkey, up to Europe, all right? And then you had the Crusades, so you had the Christians who were making their way from the west to the east, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you have this. And so they chose to, because of the importance of being neutral, and not having to be anything, all right, they chose to convert en masse to Judaism. All right, so I'm saying all of that to interact to say that the struggle that's going on in the Middle East, all right, is between a European population claiming to be descendants of ancient Hebrews, all right, in order to control that land that they say God promised them. Unfortunately, right. while if that was true, God forgot to tell the rest of us. Because the Palestinians don't see that God promised them the land, okay? And I don't see it either, but then again, you know, I'm not Palestinian. All right, so I wanted to give some light as to why there may be some confusion about what's going on with this war that's going on over there in the Middle East. And then the Jews calling, saying that the Palestinians are anti-Semitic when the Palestinians are Semitic because they speak an Arabic language, which is an Afro-Asiatic language.
Right.
It's right there in the book, family. So don't take my word for it. It's right there. Everything that I'm saying, you can get in your books, online, anywhere. Google will bring that stuff up. Now, you got to read real carefully because Google, it's tricky. It's trying to be tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we always say that everybody is accused of persecuting the Jews. I want you to hear this remark by Bibi Netanyahu. Now, Bibi Netanyahu is the prime minister of Israel. All right? So you would think that he would care about it. Well, let's see what he says about who he cares about.
But they are detailed in my mind. We came out of COVID first. I described that in my book, my conversations with Albert Bourla of Pfizer, and I persuaded him to give tiny Israel the necessary vaccines to get us out first from the COVID. And the reason I could do that is because we have a database, 98%, a medical database, 98% of our population has digitized medical records and blue card, and anywhere you go in any hospital in Israel, north, south, doesn't make any difference, boom, you punch it in, and you know everything about this patient for the last 20 years. I said, we'll use that to tell you whether these vaccines, what do they do to people, not individual people, not with their individual identities, but statistically, what does it do to people with, meningitis? What does it do to people with high blood pressure? What is it? You know, you want to know that. So Israel became, if you will, the lab for Pfizer.
Became the lab rats is what he really wanted to say. They were guinea pigs.
And that's how we did it. We got out. We gave the information to the world, not only and published in medical magazines. So that's our database we have. I intend to bring on that database of medical, personal medical records for entire population, a genetic database, genomes, okay? Give me a saliva sample. Volunteer. But I'm sure most people will do it. Maybe we'll pay them. Now we have a genetic record on a medical record of a robust population. You have to have diversified populations. We have people from 100 lands. This is a very powerful engine. Now let pharma companies, let medical companies, let them run algorithms on this database, okay? I'm telling you right away that I'll give preference for a few years to Israeli firms.
Right. He's talking about making money on his own people. You know, he's been charged with a crime. But anyway, I wanted to bring that up and show you. He cares no more for his people. All right. He's willing to let them be lab rats so that he has formed an agreement with Pfizer. The guy that he talked about, Bourla, is the CEO of Pfizer as well as a Jew. So their interest is in making money. All right, so I'm bringing all that up to show that, number one, whenever there is a war and he starts talking about the dirty Palestinians who are anti-Semitic, even though they are Semitic, and that they must annihilate them, he doesn't tell you the real thing. And the real thing is that surrounding Gaza, that little area of Gaza, part of it extends into Israel, are natural gas and oil reserves. Let me say that.
Okay.
Natural gas and oil reserves. All right. And so mm-hmm. he's already isolated the West Bank. He had settlers going into the West Bank. The West Bank doesn't look anything like it used to look that was assigned to it back there in the 1970s. All right. And so he needs the Gaza because of the black gold and natural and the gas, the gas reserves. All right. So they haven't explored it yet, but now once they're able to move the people out, they can go in their full restoration. So I wanted to share that with you. And so there's a foundation about whatever is going on over there in the Middle East. All right, just follow the dollar. You follow the dollar, you can get a good idea of what's going on. Now, mm-hmm. that's here. That's there in the Middle East. What else is happening mm-hmm. in the Pan-African world? All right. Let me bring this up to you, and maybe the sister can tell it. As you know, there was a coup in Burkina Faso. But what you didn't know is this, and the sister will describe it for you as she talks.
There will be no more free gold coming out of Burkina Faso for the Western world. These are the words of the Burkina Faso military leader, who's also the country leader. And while he might have come to power through a military coup, he is taking every step that he can to try and right the wrongs that have been done by his predecessors when it comes to the natural resources of the country, the money that should be in the country, the development of the country. And we've seen instances where Africans are putting their lives on the line to mine these resources, and then the Western world just invade the market through middlemen. They buy it at very cheap prices, then they go and sell it for very high prices, and the money is left in Europe and America. And the president of Burkina Faso is saying, that ends with me.
Si nous prenons par exemple le volet de l'orpaillage, votre thème en dit long sur l'employabilité des jeunes en milieu rural.
All right, he's just going, he's speaking in French, so he's describing what she just said. And they have a subscript mm-hmm. here, but I don't read it, you know, while he's talking. But anyway, this is the leader of the recent military coup, all right, and this was an announcement that he made over a week ago, all right, that France or any country, all right, that, you know, they have rich, they have gold, they have uranium. All right, he's selling it, and mm-hmm. they are no longer going to sell it below market value so that the Europeans and Americans can sell it above value or at market value and make huge profit. In other words, pay the Africans peanuts, all right, and mm-hmm. do that. In addition to that, what he has also done, all right, was form an alliance, in fact, in September, just last month, mm-hmm. In Bamako, that's Bamako, Mali, Burkina Faso, the leaders of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger established the Alliance of Sahel States, a mutual defense pact. The agreement was signed against the backdrop of an ongoing political crisis in Niger following a coup on the 26th of July. The regional bloc, the ECOWAS, Economic Community of West African States, had threatened to militarily intervene. Now, they haven't, you know, and it's part of ECOWAS, all right? They just had a coup. But it was the French, you know, who was insisting that ECOWAS, now they are an economic pact, all right, to deal with trade. Right. Mm-hmm. In other words, that the soldiers invade Niger and Burkina Faso to restore the French picked leadership, all right, or the Western picked leadership that was providing. Mm-hmm. selling the gold and the minerals that they have below market price, and of course they were rich mm-hmm. themselves as a consequence of the deal that they made. So I thought that was that was good news on the West. Now let's stick with the continent. In the Democratic Republic of the Continent, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says that the massive displacement of civilians continues in the east of the country. Now, the east of the country of the Congo is where they have most of the minerals. That's near an area called Goma. It borders Rwanda and Burkina and well, Rwanda in particular. And but that's where a lot of the minerals. So if you go to the eastern part of the country, then you go south where they have the copper. All right. In fact, they used to call it south of province, which means copper in their language. The reason for this announcement is that they were talking about the things going on in Ukraine and, of course, recently what's going on in Gaza. And as a consequence of the disturbance going on there, over 145,000 people have fled this area that I was telling you about in the east. It's Masisi and Rutshuru territories. All right. To the tune of 8,000 people were forced to leave their homes every day. That's 8,000 people who were forced to leave their homes as a result of this. I want to point this out because you say, okay, we got black folks killing black folks and all this. I usually try to point out the facts. Yeah, that might be true, but it's white money going in there, all right, creating, you know, most of the military, if not all of military leadership, are trained in Western country, in particular, the U.S., right? They're trained. So their allegiance is basically to whoever trained them. And, of course, they get money as a consequence of being trained and then assuming the leadership. Their families, you know, get to go to Europe or they get to go to America, would have this, buy property here and all that other kind of stuff, all right, and get an so-called education here. So they're more aligned to the interests of the Western countries than they are to their people. All right, so they're fighting over the minerals. What they're fighting for is to see, number one, who's gonna be the person who can negotiate their bribe with the West. That's all. They're just fighting. They want to get rich. They're thinking of themselves. They're not necessarily thinking of the people. That's going on in the Congo. I wanted to bring that up to show you that a lot of money is being allocated to go to Israel. A lot of money is being allocated to go to the Ukraine. And the war that's being nurtured by violence, by guns, that the Africans do not produce, they don't manufacture anything, the UN, even the AU, cannot see where the flow of arms is coming in, all right, to arm these troops. I mean, whether it's West Africa, East Africa, whatever, somehow the UN and the AU cannot find these routes, all right, so that they can, you know, they just can't. They got all the technology in the world, but they can't find these routes. Sudan, all right, staying on the African continent. UNICEF and the World Health Organization have warned today that at least 10,000 children in the Sudan under the age of 5 may die by the end of this year. Now, they always give these high figures, and I'm not saying that these figures are much lower, but they always give the high figures in order to get you to give, all right, and the money goes into pockets. It doesn't go to the people that were designed to help. All right, so age of 5 by the end of this year due to an increase in food insecurity. Now, Africa got enough land to feed the world, all right, but because the West grew its technology and its herbicides and pesticides and all this other kind of stuff, GMOs and stuff like this, is able to produce faster and cheaper. All right, so therefore, it's able to affect the productive capabilities of the African farmer. All right, so they choose not to plant. Consequently, you know, that means they have to import. If they can't plant or eat their own self, they have to import it. Therefore, the people who controls you are the people who feed you, and we see that we see that going on right now. All right, let's jump back over here. Well, let's stay on the other side of the pond. The UN. This is a message from the UN Permanent Forum on People of African Descent. Hey, now this family, I'd like you to bear particular attention to. It says here, dear all, this is from the UN Permanent Forum on People of African Descent. They've had two sessions. In fact, I belong to ANCOBRA, and COBRA sent twice representatives to these forums. And from what I gathered, people were impressed. We didn't you know, act like we were just here to party. At least they were supposed to act like that because they were paying their fee. So they better act something other than they want to party. Well, anyway, they didn't do that. But anyway, you're all. The Office of the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights invites member states, that's member states, that's the UN member states, United Nations agencies, programs and funds, national human rights institutions, now we're getting close to us, civil society actors, that's us, our organizations, non-government organizations, academia, experts on issues related to people of African descent, and all other relevant stakeholders to submit input, all right, on topics to be considered for the third session. So that means then if you have an organization, you know, you are considered, you know, civil society actors, all right? All right, or you're a nonprofit, all right? In that civil as civil society actors, all right, that is aimed at addressing issues that affect people of African descent, then you might want to send some input as to what you think they should do during their third session. All right, the third session, okay, is going to be held the 16th through the 19th in April of 2024 in Geneva, Switzerland. I don't know if we're going over there because it costs a lot of money to go to Geneva, Switzerland. But anyway, the input is needed by 12 November 2023, before midnight. Okay, so if you're one of those organizations that I just named and you have what you consider valuable input that you would like the permanent forum of people of African descent to discuss, then you want to get your input to them by the 12th of November. And again, that third session will be held next year in April from the 16th through the 16th through the 19th. All right. All right, sister, I've been talking a lot. I mean, just let me give it any calling in, want to get any more, or maybe want to share something?
There are no hands raised, Brother Shabaka.
Do you have a question?
No, I don't have a question. I would like to make a comment, though. This is very pertinent information, because basically we don't really have a, to my knowledge, I'll put it that way, to my knowledge, we don't have a central place to go to know all the things that's going on. And if we do, would you share the location of that central knowledge base so that we can check on it from time to time so we can keep ourselves abreast of what's going on?
Yeah, you're right. We don't have that. There are, you know, like I get different pieces of information from various groups. We don't have a what I would call a centralized think tank who looks at this information, provided as well as doing their own assessment of the information that they gather and why it needs to be of importance for that. So what we have is that a lot of our organization falls behind as a consequence of not knowing what is going on internationally. And we need to know what is going on internationally because the French and the Americans talk, and the Americans talk more to the British, to the former British colony, more so than they do the French. Okay, even the adversary, the Russians, they talk to the Russians. They talk to the Israelis. All right, they're talking. They talk to the Australians. All right, we're not talking. We barely talk. On the other, to the group on the other side of town, all right. And so we need to look at what are the things that people are doing. And let me put this on the radio, to the listeners. You know, there is a website. It's called the blackeconomics.com. Blackeconomics.com. And a number of people have put together what they call a long-term strategic plan. In that plan, part of it deals with communications and how we can develop the communication apparatus as well as a number of other areas. Listeners, if you're out there, you need to go download the plan. It's 146 pages, but, you know, you can read the executive summary, which is only about 5 or 6 pages. If you like that, then download. You can download both. Take your time and read through it. But it gives some information, you know, on organizing and then the sharing of organizing, all right, particularly to put together a plan that is necessary to take us out of the dilemma that we're in. The reason for this is this. Now, even Ulu, you know, Ulu is doing this thing, and Cobra is doing this thing. The Nation is doing this thing. The Black Hebrew Lights are doing their thing. And right now there are attempts to have us talk to each other and share and then try to come up with a plan that addresses from a collective, and, you know, Ulu is about cooperative, all right? We are mostly in the area economics, but we can extend cooperative exchange of information, which is necessary because the Europeans are doing it, and they have very fast means of getting that information to each other and making decisions rapidly that we don't know anything about. All right. For an example, let me just give you one thing. I know the time is moving right quickly. All right, that the satellites, I didn't know there was thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of satellites in the area, and that what the Europeans is doing is trying to create a grid to, you know, they're trying to collect information and store the information, all right? But, you know, there's energy concerns when you have a lot of electronic equipment. So what they're doing is this, all right? They're putting the stuff up in satellites. Satellites have these solar devices to collect information. They're putting a whole net of solar so that they don't have to worry about, because the sun out there in space, the sun is available 24/7. So they can get the energy from the sun by having solar panels, all right, and they can beam down, you know, anytime they want to their station, all right, and disseminate the information there. So they don't have to worry about clouds. They don't have to worry about the rotation 24 hours and all that other kind of stuff. So that's what they're doing. Now, how many of our people know that? Well,
that's personal.
If these people on this call know it, if they didn't know it, all right, that's what the Europeans are doing that we don't know about. So we need that information because, you know, where we might think, well, this is how we might be able to harness energy. Well, they thought of how to harness energy a lot better. They just say they put a whole bunch of satellites, create a network of satellites that have solar panels. They get the direct energy from the sun 24/7 and don't have to worry about clouds, rain, or anything like that, and can fund their activity down here. That's what we need to know. All right, still staying on this side. The 31st of this month, health equity webinar. There's a health equity webinar, and I don't have an email address. It's for black folks, but you can go on your internet, go to the search engine, particularly Google, and just put health equity webinar October 31st. That's it. And all this information will come up regarding that. We need to be on that because it talks about health. In addition to that, that is actually a prelude for a Black Health Equity Summit, which is going to be in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, as a fact, and that's going to be November 9th. And so if you want to get some prelude of information that's going to happen on the 9th, because the 9th is seminar is in person, all right, you can go to the webinar, which is online, find out some of the things that's going to be talked about there. All of this is free, family. It's free. And so if you want to go, if you're in the Baltimore, D.C. Area, Frederick area, Wilmington, Delaware area, or what have you, Philly even, you can take the hour and a half drive and come down to Baltimore. You want to go to the Black Health Equity Summit. All right, it's going to be given at 7310 Park Heights Avenue in Baltimore, 21208. Just put that information in your search engine and you can get more information. That's Black Health Equity Summit, all right, revolutionizing community health, going to be free November 9th. If you can't get there, you want to go to the webinar. That's just Health Equity Webinar, October 31st of this year, and it'll speak. A lot of stuff will be going on. What we miss, sister, unfortunately, we missed this, and this was the All-Party Parliamentary Group for African Reparations. It was a UK reparations conference that was given overseas in the UK. A lot of speakers. It went on for 2 days. Mm-hmm. 21st and the 22nd. So it was just the past weekend. It was tremendous. Young people spoke. Old people spoke. I want to play a couple of clips just to hear, just to give you an idea of some of what they talked about. Now, what I'm going to play here is a sister. All right. This is a sister, all right, who was making a presentation at the Parliament, the UK Parliament. She was addressing the Prime Minister. I want you to listen to what mm-hmm. he said.
This month marks 23 years since the passing of the late, great Bernie Grant, a former member of this House and the founder of the UK reparations movement in the UK. In his last Prime Minister's question before his death, he asked for an apology to the people of African descent, living and dead, for our country's role in slavery and colonialism. But since then, prime ministers and heads of state have only ever expressed sorrow or deep regret. These are not sentiments that are befitting one of the greatest atrocities in human history. And there's been no acknowledgement of the wealth that has been amassed or the fact that our country took out the largest loan it ever has to pay off the slave owners and not the enslaved. So I would ask the Prime Minister today if he will do what Bernie Grant asked all those years ago, what I have asked and what countless others have asked since, and offer a full and meaningful apology for our country's role in slavery and colonialism and commit to reparatory justice.
Mr. Speaker, that what I think our focus should now be on doing is, of course, understanding our history in all its parts, not running away from it, but right now making sure that we have a society which is inclusive and tolerant of people from all backgrounds. That's something that we on this house, our side of the house, are committed to doing and will continue to deliver. But trying to unpick our history is not the right way forward, and it's not something that we will focus our energies on.
Okay, all right, that was... My boy. That was the Prime Minister. He had a sister behind him. I guess he was his secretary. Essentially what he says, you won't get it today. This guy, his name is Rishi Sunak. This is the current Prime Minister of Great Britain, UK, United mm-hmm. Kingdom. He's an Indian. He's of East Indian
right.
ancestry. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's taking up the cause. He said, no apology today. In addition to that, right. I want to play this, and then we'll end it. This is a brother who repatriated to Guinea-Bissau, and he's asking this question to the UN, the United States representative. When there's crimes are being committed, the UN will send down a delegation to see how you're doing, how you're making out towards your crime. And people can raise questions. Mm-hmm. So we just happened to raise this question because this group happened to be in Geneva. So he went up from Guinea-Bissau. But listen to him.
I greeted you in the language of my Balanta ancestors, including my fifth-generation great-grandfather, who was captured as an 8-year-old boy in his village of Inche in the country of Guinea-Bissau, trafficked across the Atlantic, and subjected to chattel enslavement in the United States, which resulted in ethnocide. There are now documented 6,534 Balanta people that were trafficked to the United States, and an estimated minimum of 30,000 of us. Not only did I greet you in my ancestral language, I wore an article of our traditional clothing, which, according to the 1740 Negro law in South Carolina, I would be subject to up to 40 whippings on my back for possessing. I now live in my ancestral homeland. I have repatriated, the first of my family to return after 250 years of living in the land of our captivity in the United States. I am the living example that it is possible to recover from United States state-sanctioned ethnocide. I have the following questions. What remedies are available to the Palenque people in America for redress of ethnocide? Two, will the government of the United States engage the government of the Republic of Guinea-Bissau to negotiate our voluntary repatriation? Question three, how can the Palenque Brasa History and Genealogy Society in America, of which I am the president, how can we engage in the process of receiving reparations for the crimes of chattel slavery and ethnocide in the United States? And my last question, thank you.
Now he's asking, what he's doing is asking the U.S. delegation there in Geneva, the United States, the question of ethnocide is like genocide, but it's particularized to a particular community. It's like the Herero people in Namibia. All right. In other words, the Germans came there and massacred there because they wanted the land. All right. So they didn't do that to the other ethnic groups, although they were black. They just did it to the Nama people and the Herero people. All right. So that would be considered ethnocide. In other words, you committed genocide against an ethnic group. And so he's saying there are 600, documented that there's 600,000 that were captured, and there's only about 30,000 that are left now, which means there's been definitely a reduction in the population, okay? And so this is what he was having. Now, I want you to listen to the Negroes that happen to represent the commission that is supposed to be addressing this thing. The first guy that you hear is I guess you can call him a brother.
That's a question about somebody who issue that I've answered. I'm Kareem Marshall. I'm the Senior Advisor for Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So I'm alarmed to hear that one of our regions hasn't responded to you, so I'll get your information at the end of this so that we can close that loop. Secondarily, as you all know, as a federal system, permitting can be a complicated process. So I'd like to follow up with you to talk about how we can better coordinate, because we have expanded a lot of our efforts to work with our partners in the states to make sure that they are adhering to the delegated authority that's provided.
All right, I'm going to stop here because I know time is running out. He was talking as if this was going on today. The guy talked about what was happening during the slave period. He's talking as if it was happening today and that they're going to check into it. And he's a brother. Okay. These are the things. This has happened recently. This was about a week ago that this presentation was made. I thought it would be important for people to know that there are people who are using their reparation activity to try to repatriate because they figure that the United States and its institution is not going to allow any free expression among people of African descent. And I wanted to bring that kind of news to you. I wanted to tell you about what Farrakhan was doing, what the Europeans are doing, what we needed to be aware of that we don't know, and we need to find some way to be able to collect information to see how whatever plans we have, you know, plans are not fixed. They're modified as things change. But the European is going to do everything in his power to make sure we are unaware of any changes that take place. We have to be aware of that, and then we have to counter that. All right, sister, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share this evening. I'm sorry that we didn't get some brothers and sisters to come on, but hopefully they took a few notes so that they can do their own research. So thank you so much, and I look forward to returning again.
Thank you, Brother Shibaka. You've given us quite a bit of information, and like you say, I would hope that we can stay up on this so we'll know what's going on. We want to thank everybody that joined us for this evening's program. We want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.